Okay, I'm testing my English today. I'm awake.
Here we go. This is English. Thank you.
This is English. It's English now. English channel. You want to try the Spanish channel or is it okay?
English channel. 1, 2, 3. This is the English channel. 1, 2, 3.
Spanish, okay. Spanish. Yeah, it's English, but it's Spanish.
You want Spanish?
Yes. Here we work. Okay, Portuguese.
It was very, very dark this morning. Are you on that, fixing them?
Josh, put Nancy, if that's good in there, thank you.
Thanks, Josh.
No, I didn't know anybody. We'll see what's
Josh, I don't know. Should be, I talk through one of the monsters.
Check one, check two, check, okay, check.
What was that? It was the projectors that went flop.
No, they're connecting and disconnecting the input.
But those two.
Could actually turn these lights.
Push it in request.
Yeah. All right, yeah. That's Eric.
Is that supposed to be on the left? Can you bring up the scribe monitor on the left?
Microphone check, 1, 2, 3.
We're going to start in about 2 more minutes. We have a couple technical issues being worked out. We'll start in 1 or 2 minutes. Thank you.
For those that are standing in the back of the room, there are plenty of space in this side, in the front.
Are we only using one projector? Okay, very good. We're set? Okay. Good morning. Thank you all for joining us for the new GTLD program update. My name is Christine Ouellette. I'm joined by other members of the Global Domains Division to present and discuss the current program status. It's a rather dark room, but I hope you all can see us up here. Today we are going to cover a variety of topics. We'll go through application processing. We'll talk about the readiness of our operational support mechanisms. We'll be discussing the various rights protection mechanisms supported and in place for the new GTLD program. We'll give an update on the name collision work and the latest information there, and then we'll look ahead to the timeline for new GTLD delegation and operations in the root. So in the most recent weeks, I would suspect that everyone in the room is aware that we have delegated 24 of the first new GTLDs. That process went quite smoothly. Fadi just gave an update. I think it's an accomplishment everyone in the room should be amazingly proud of. A lot of work went into this, not just on our side of this table, but everyone in the community had a very significant hand in this. So congratulations to all. Four of those being IDNs at the top of the screen, and the other 20 of those being ASCIIs. We started last year with 1,930 applications. To date, we've had 128 of those original applications withdraw. Four of them have been determined not to be approved, leaving us with 1,798 active applications. 960 of those have been determined to be eligible for contracting and have been invited to contracting to date. You'll see down at the bottom some of the reasons for the other 838 applications not being invited to contracting. That includes contention, GAC advice, open objections, pending change requests, and the last few applications still in evaluation. We have received to date 275 responses to contracting out of the 960 invited. We anticipate that as GAC advice and objections are handled and cleared in the coming weeks, that we look forward to more applicants responding to those contracting invitation requests. We've signed 144 contracts. For 47 of those applicants have passed pre-delegation testing and 24 delegated. In recent weeks, you've seen this processing being published. A lot of these statistics are published on a weekly basis on the microsite. Much of our work, as we did from March on for evaluation, much of our work has been processing on a weekly cadence. So weekly invitations to contracting, weekly process for contract signing, transition to delegation, etc. I hope that you see that this has been an improvement, and the predictability of that operation is something that I think we are all very proud of and happy to be able to report on a consistent basis. So rather than speak for the entire session today, I'm going to share the stage with my team here, as we've been doing in the monthly webinars. So I will turn the microphone over to Trang Nguyen to give you all an update on evaluation status, as well as objections and dispute resolution.
Thank you, Christine. Move closer. Next slide, please. Okay, and here's an update on application evaluation. This a different visual representation, but it's the same sort of numbers that you've been seeing as presented on the monthly webinars. The first line up there is of the 1930 applications that were submitted. To date, we have 128 withdrawals and 4 applications that are not approved, leaving 1,798 applications that have an active status. Of those 1,798 applications, 1,758 have passed initial evaluation, 38 were eligible for extended evaluation, and there are 2 applications that are still currently in initial evaluation. And at the bottom, you can see that of the 38 applications that were eligible for extended evaluation, we have 11 that have passed. We have one that's in a process we call extended evaluation outreach. And then we have 4 that are in what we call post-clarification question review. There are 16 applications that are in the CQ window, which means that we have CQ issues to the applicant and are awaiting their response. And 6 applications are awaiting clarifying questions to be issued. The reasons for the held up is because of pending change requests. So until those change requests are finalized, the clarifying questions cannot be written. And so that's why those 6 applications are still on hold. Next slide, please. This next slide shows a status on the objection and dispute resolution process. You know, what I wanted to illustrate on this slide is to show that there's been a lot of progress on the dispute resolution process overall. As you can see at the top, all of the legal rights objections have been finalized, all 69 of them, as well as the string confusion objections. There are now only 4 objections that are pending, so the majority of the string confusion objections have also been finalized. There has been some progress on the limited public interest and community objections. Those are taking a little bit longer than anticipated due to some of the processing of the applications on the ICC part. You know, ICC has this process that they called review post determination, meaning that the ICC does take some time to review the determinations that are provided to them from the expert panelists. So some of the objections are still within that review process, and we expect that a lot will be finalized in the next month or two for publication. Next slide, please. On this slide, we are showing the data in a slightly different cut. It shows of the objections that have been finalized, what the outcomes are. As you can see, of the 130 objections, determinations, about 86% of them, or 113 of them, are cases where the applicant has prevailed. There are 92 cases that are still in process, and 41 have been terminated. And the termination could have been done due to applications that have been withdrawn, or objections that have been withdrawn, or cases where the parties have settled.
Thank you, Tring. I'm going to give you a quick update on the status of GAC advice coming out of the Beijing and Durban meetings. We had those communiques. On GAC Category 2 advice, 186 applications or 61 strings were noted and subject to the GAC Category 2 advice. In August, we sent inquiries out to those applications asking if they still intended to operate or if they intended to operate as exclusive access. 139 indicated they would not be operating as exclusive access. 35 said that although they previously indicated they would be exclusive, they no longer intend to operate in an exclusive manner. 11 intend to operate in an exclusive manner, and 1 with no response. I've gotten several questions. I know customer service has been asked frequently. If your application previously stated that you would operate in an exclusive manner and now you do not intend to operate in an exclusive manner, those applicants were notified, those 35 applicants were notified and informed that they should be submitting an application change request to inform ICANN of that change. So the 139 applications that do not intend to operate in an exclusive manner, we have moved forward with and are inviting into contracting. There are a number of additional strings that were noted in the GAC advice. The NGPC continues to consider GAC advice. A few weeks ago, the NGPC submitted a proposal to the GAC informing them of a plan and an approach to implement GAC Category 1 advice. That was discussed between the NGPC and the GAC yesterday. The intention is to continue to hold those discussions this week. But that is the proposal has been posted publicly and is available for the proposed handling of the GAC Category 1 advice with some revisions to the safeguards as well as the strings to which those revised safeguards would apply. Let us pause while the projection gets changed. Excellent. Okay, so shall we move on? Thank you. And I will now turn the microphone over to Steve Chan from the GTLD team to talk to you about community priority evaluation and auctions.
Thank you, Christine. I'm going to start with community priority evaluation, or CPE. We sent out the first two invitations to eligible applications, I believe the 9th of October, and CPE officially started on the 24th of October. So there's two applications that are in the midst of CPE. There are also two eligible applications that are invited and yet to elect, but they're invited. There are 28 community applications in contention that remain ineligible at the moment. But as they become eligible, we'll be sending out invitations on a weekly basis going forward. We expect the evaluation process to take approximately 2 to 3 months to complete, and we'll be updating the status and outcomes on the CPE page of the microsite, and the URLs at the bottom of the page. So, auctions. First of November, we published the preliminary auction rules for review, and we had a webinar on the 7th of November to discuss the rules and other topics for auctions. Mid-December, we expect to publish the bidder agreement for review by the community. And in early 2014, we expect to send out the first invitations to eligible contention sets. And early March 2014 is when we're targeting for the first auction events to occur. We have a CPE and auction dedicated session later today at 5:15 in the same room, so we hope to see some of you guys then.
Thanks, Steve. Now, since we started late and we've had a few technical difficulties, I've asked the team to pick up the pace a little bit. So I'm going to turn it over to Trang Nguyen to give us an update on contracting.
Thanks, Christine. So contracting progress, as you know, we've sent out CIR invitations to all applicants through Priority 1930 who were eligible. That represents 960 applications. Of the 960 that we invited to contracting, 275 responded. That represents still less than 30% response rate. Of the 275 applicants who responded to the contracting invite, we've sent 178 contracts out for signature and have executed of that amount 144 contracts. And this is a slide that I've shown in last month's webinar. It represents the weekly contracting cycle that we're now operating under. So every single day of the week represents a particular queue within the contracting process. Monday is when we process any contracting responses that we've received for the week. Tuesdays is when we send out contracts for signature. And I want to make sure you understand that because we process your responses on Monday doesn't necessarily mean that the next day we're going to be sending out a contract. It's just there is about a 3 to 4 week cycle in all of this. But typically, if you're talking about 5 days of the week, Tuesdays is when we typically send out contracts for signature. Wednesday is when we send out invitations for contracting. And Thursday is when I can execute registry agreements. And Friday is typically when we post the executed registry agreements. And at each one of these queues, we shuffle the queue and basically go by priority numbers in terms of sending out invitations and or registry agreements or executing registry agreements. So we are continuing to honor priority number as we process applications for contracting.
Thank you, Trang. Hand it over to Russ.
All right, good morning, everybody. I'm going to talk about pre-delegation testing and the transition to delegation process. So the next one. So thanks to the contracting team's tremendous efforts over the last few weeks to crank out contracts, the pipeline for PDT has filled up very nicely. You can see we have 36 applicants invited to PDT. Those are getting invited on Fridays just after they come out of contracting. We're doing our scheduling on Tuesdays. Everyone who's responded to their invite from Friday is getting scheduled on Tuesdays. We have 42 applications in the PDT process right now. 20 of them are starting today. And we've published 47 PDT results. So far, they've all passed, which has been outstanding. It hasn't always been easy to get everybody to pass, but .SC, our PDT provider, has been working diligently with the PDT contacts to address any issues that may be preventing a pass and getting those clarified when possible. And so far, all issues have been able to be resolved in the two, occasionally three-week time frame, but almost all appointments are ending within 2 weeks, which I think will be good news. We continue to adjust the operating cycle for PDT to try and continue to improve and tighten up the process duration as best we can. We've created something we're calling Fast Track, which enables applicants who have registry service providers have passed PDT already. For new applications entering, they're able to start PDT right away rather than have the week and a half of data entry. They're doing data entry in 2 or 3 days, enabling to cut another week out of the process. And in December, we anticipate we're going to make a couple of changes to the test instructions. And we've listened to the feedback, and we're working really hard to make sure that no changes will be required. There'll be optional items. There'll be clarifications in many cases, such that those who have already passed PDT will not need to do anything different the next time they have an application going through PDT, but it'll be further clarification to try and prevent issues that we're identifying and asking follow-up questions in the PDT process on. Next one. in transition to delegation, the process we have laid out is there's three eligibility requirements. There's passing pre-delegation testing. There's receiving and being eligible for the alternate path to delegation. And there's the completion of registry onboarding, step one. Once those three eligibility items are resolved, we're issuing a request for a delegation point of contact and then issuing a delegation token to that delegation point of contact so they can begin the delegation process in the RZM system. And so far you can see the statistics. 9 are still pending that eligibility. 4 are currently in the process. We've transferred 10 tokens that are out there, and 24 have been delegated. With that, I'll pass it over to Krista Papik to speak to registry onboarding.
Thanks, Russ. Welcome, everyone. So registry onboarding is the process that we have to help support registries and guide them into actually becoming interacting with ICANN and helping them through the startup phase as they're proceeding to delegation and then implementing their post-delegation processes and requirements. There are 3 steps to registry onboarding. Just to back up one step. The onboarding process starts right after you sign your registry agreement or once it's fully executed, and it runs in parallel to the pre-delegation testing process, delegation, and sunrise and claims. Step one there's 2 parts to it. It's an information collection step where we collect contact information. Up until this point, we only have contact information for the application, but not very much contact information for what's now a contracted party or registry operator. The second part of step one is credentialing and operational support. So we collect the information that we need for the registry operator to implement the various systems that they need to have to report to ICANN what kind of registrations, how many registrations they have, as well as some of the other processes like the centralized zone data system and such. The completion of step one is a gating factor to transitioning to delegation or to receiving your IANA token. So as I said, it runs in parallel to PDT, so you have a good chunk of time there to get that completed, but you must complete step one in order to get your delegation token. Step two starts upon delegation, and that's where we actually use the data collected in the second part of step one to establish the service infrastructures for the registries. So that's where we use the tokens to set up the URS for you, the zone file access, the registry reporting interface, and so on. There is a session on Wednesday morning that we're going to talk in more detail. Trang mentioned in her presentation, we'll get into a lot more detail on contracting and onboarding. So you'll have a lot better information or more robust information Wednesday morning. The third step can happen as early as delegation. And this is really where you notify ICANN of your sunrise dates and claims dates. And if you have limited registration periods, those dates. And there's an interaction there that occurs prior to your sunrise starting. And again, that will be covered in the more detail in the onboarding session. So that's it. Thank you. I'm going to turn it over to Francisco.
Thank you, Krista. I'm going to talk about some of the mechanisms that we have to support the operations, the continued operations of new ETLDs. Next slide, please. First one, we have a mechanism called Emergency Backend Registry Operator, or EVER, as we like to call it. This is a mechanism that will allow to continue the operation of a new ETLD in case there is a failure in the one of the 5 critical functions of the registry. The critical functions of the registry as defined in the registry agreement are DNS, DNSSEC, WHIS, EPP, and data escrow. We have 2 providers already contracted, CNIC and CORE. We are in talks with 2 more. And some highlights of the process for DNS. the requirement, the service level requirement that we have is to have DNS and DNSSEC service restore in 8 hours. This is a pretty fast recovery time for DNS in case of failure. And the total time to recover the, all the critical functions is estimated to be in the order of 150 hours. So just a few days. These are the highlights in terms of the Ibero. Next slide, please. Data escrow. So in order to have in order to enable the Ibero to work, we need to have this mechanism which is called data escrow. This is the mechanism by which registries and registrars deposit information, registration data information, with a third party called the data escrow agent. These data escrow agents are approved by ICANN in the case of the new ETLDs. The registries deposit the information in a standard format defined by two drafts that are that are being developed, that are in the final stage of development. These escrow agents and the registries provide daily notifications to ICANN regarding the reports that they, the deposits that they do. And in case of need, in case there is an emergency in one TLD, we can request the release of this data to the Ibero so that the operation of that affected TLD can be continued with minimum effect in the registrants. And finally, there is also a mechanism to release data to ICANN for audit purposes. As of May this year, we have two data escrow agents already approved, and we have four more that are in the process of being approved. As I mentioned before, there are two internal drafts. You have the links there. They are in the final stage. Quite stable, and we are planning to go for RFC status in the ITF after initial deployment, after we see that everything looks fine and there is no need for adjustment. The other mechanism that we have to ensure the continued operation of new ETLDs is the service level agreement monitoring system. This is a system that monitors the performance. Oh, I'm sorry. Next slide. Yeah, that one. This system monitors the services provided by the registry. That's four of the five critical functions: DNS, DNSSEC, EPP, and WHOIS. And the purpose of this system is to ensure there is compliance with the service level agreement that is defined in the registry agreement. That's specification 10. For an ETLDs. We have the system where the first phase of the system working as of October this year. It's currently monitoring DNS, DNSSEC, and WHOIS for the registries that the TLDs that have been delegated. We have a next phase plan for next month in which we plan to incorporate support for EPP. And full support for WHOIS and DNS. The platform is being developed by a contractor, and we have a network of nodes in the different ICANN regions, 38 nodes. I think it's already 40 as of today. And we have two central processing locations. Next slide, please. This is just a picture of how the system is developed. We have multiple probes, and they inject the data to the two central locations that process the data received from the probe nodes and generate alerts and reports as they are needed. We have a NOC that is 7x24, or should I say it, we're in the process of building all the process around the NOC, and that will allow us to respond to emergencies at any time of the day. Next slide, please. Finally, we have the registry reporting interface. This is a system that allows both the registries and the data escrow agents to report the when they make deposits, when the registries make deposits, so we get notifications of this, and so we can know that everything is according to the requirement for the registries. And it also allows the registries to send their monthly reports for the. The reports for the transactions which are used for billing the registries and the registrars, and also the activity functions report that is that contains information about the some operational indicators from the registries. Thank you.
Thanks, Francisco. Karen, if you'd give us an update on Trademark Clearinghouse.
Thank you, Christine. So I'll just give a high-level update here. We have a couple of other sessions during the week for more detail. Next slide, please. So we have now the Trademark Clearinghouse fully in place. In the in terms of the verification service, this has been launched in March, so it's been active for about 6 months. Rights holders can submit registered trademarks, trademarks protected by statute or treaty, and court-validated marks for verification by the clearinghouse. And additionally, up to 50 labels can be associated once a record is verified associated with that trademark based on a UDRP or a court decision. And once that validation happens, those labels become subject to the claims process. At the bottom, there's a little under 17,000 records in the clearinghouse currently, representing 99 jurisdictions. And the procedure for submitting decisions for association of additional labels has been available for a few weeks, and to date, there's been 76 of those decisions submitted. Next slide. In terms of the Sunrise and Claims services, those have also been launched as of August and September. We have the a number of users, registry and registrar users, accessing the test environment, completing that and developing their systems. We also have the process up for test certification for registries and registrars. You see at the bottom there the number of users, and we have a number now who have successfully passed the testing and can move on to the next stages. Finally, we have what we call TLE startup information. This is the phase that we're in now. That includes submission once a TLE is ready to begin to schedule its Sunrise and Claims period. The information is given in a notice that includes the dates for the Sunrise and Claims periods and any additional periods, in particular the complete Sunrise policies for the TLD and indication that the certification technical certification has been passed. Currently, we've received 8 notices of TLD startup information. We have 1 Sunrise period in progress now and 5 more that are scheduled. You can see that information at the link on the bottom that's been published. We have been developing for a while what we call what we refer to as the Sunrise portal, which will include some enhanced functionality and information on in terms of all of the TLDs that are starting up. In the interim, you can find all of that on the link on the screen. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Now to Krista to talk about rights protection and post-delegation dispute resolution.
Thanks, Christine. So these are updates on the post-delegation dispute resolution procedures. So the changes since the last ICANN meeting in Durban are that the registry restrictions dispute resolution procedure, the rules for this, the ICANN rules, were published on October 15th. There is one provider, this part's not an update, but just as a reminder, there's one provider for this procedure, which is Forum or the National Arbitration Forum. Trademark Post-Delegation Dispute Resolution Procedure, or TMPDDRP, has 3 providers, which are Forum, ADNDRC, or the Asian Domain Name Dispute Resolution Center, and WIPO. Those rules were also published on October 15th. Finally, public interest commitments, or the PIC-DRP, we just concluded the second public comment process. It closed at 2359 UTC on the 14th of November. We are working on the summary and analysis of the PIC-DRP comments that we received, and we intend to publish those. We have a goal of publishing them next week. The slide is slightly off in saying that we intend to publish the final PIC-DRP. We're still looking through the public comments, and we haven't gotten to the point where we can make that determination yet, but if the public comments are largely in line with what was posted, and we could potentially post it that early, but still figuring that part out. And the next steps are publish the summary and analysis. If we can publish a final PIC-DRP, then we would be issuing requests for expressions of interest for the expert panel that's described in the current version of the PIC-DRP. And then, of course, go on to selecting panel members. Just one couple informational items. I know Karen also mentioned we do have a rights protection mechanism session later today where we talk about the different rights protections that are available to users, internet users. And additionally, we have a booth out near the booth area. It's I think it's across from the ICANN welcome booth, where we're demoing the URS system. We're also demoing a couple other systems, the CZDS and the Aeros systems. But there's a schedule posted, so for those of you who are interested in seeing a demo of the URS or any of those other systems, please stop by the booth. Thank you.
Thanks, Krista. Francisco?
Thank you, Christine. I forgot for the other part of my presentation. There is a session on the continued operations of the new TLDs on Thursday at 11. If you're interested in having more details about the subjects that I talked before. So regarding name collision, next slide, please. There is a more detailed session later today in this room at 3 p.m. If you're interested in more detail, the highlights that I will mention right now is that we have a plan and collision occurrence management plan that was adopted, approved by the new ETLD program committee from the ICANN board on 7 October. That plan describes the different steps that ICANN staff needs to take and new TLD registries have to take in order to mitigate the risk regarding name collision. On 16 October, we published the implementation plan for that resolution. And on 1st November, we engaged lead contractor to help develop one of the key elements of the plan, which is the development of what is called name collision occurrence management framework. The idea is that this framework will identify the parameters needed to assess the probability and severity of impact of name collision and specify the corresponding mitigation measures that need to be applied by the registries according to the different categories of name collisions that have to be identified. We also published what is called the alternate path to delegation. This is the sort of fast track to auto delegation, a mechanism by which an ETLD blocks a set of second level domain names that have been identified in the DIRL and other relevant data sets available. Those lists, yesterday we completed the publication of the reports for all the new TLDs that were found eligible for this mechanism. Some of them were not found eligible, and there are more details about that later today. Thank you.
Thank you, Francisco. Thank you, everybody. So we're almost done here. I'm just going to project one timeline here. I've shown other earliest path timelines. This isn't exactly an earliest path timeline. It's sort of an anticipated timeline for new GTLD operations. So as we continue to execute registry agreements, this is the type of timeline you can anticipate between that invitation to contracting and the end of the first sunrise, the 60-day sunrise period. If that's where operation starts or other phases of launch begin. So this is just generally anticipated timeline we're asked about frequently. Your TLD may differ. So with that, it's nearly 11:30. I've been told we have some extra time in the room, so we're going to go to the Q&A portion of the session. Thank you, Nicole. We do have more sessions coming up the rest of the week listed here on the screen. So we'll take questions for as long as we can in this room. Thank you. Hello, Amadeo. Is the microphone working?
Hello. Does it work? Yes. Good morning to all the team here and everybody. I just want to bring good news to the people in the room. It's possible to pass all these steps that you've explained. We are living proof of that. We've been through all of this, and we are still alive here. We even found some spare time to pass the Ibero...
Amadeo, the microphone.
Oh, it's falling now. I had to... In the process, I think there are some things that are still missing, we think, and some things that we discovered that we haven't thought about that probably would be interested to incorporate. One part that I think is missing, for instance, is some information regarding the trademark greenhouse terms and conditions, for instance, the pricing for the claim service. Perhaps it has escaped me, but I think this is not yet communicated to the registries. And something we discovered that would be interesting that you incorporate in the process of the startup information is we've seen startup information for TLDs that don't even had an error rate for registrars available, and we've even seen sunrises start with no error rate available, which means no registrar accredited, which means no registrant being able to participate. And indeed, I don't think that this in concrete case is a big problem, because they planet a sunrise that's beyond the strict minimum, so probably this will be solved before we are in trouble zone. But in the future, this may happen. And what's the point of having all this information and all these 30 mandatory days if nobody can apply, so it doesn't work as a sunrise? So I would suggest that probably we consider asking for whether there is a test environment available and where, and where is the error rate. I'm not saying that I can need to approve the error rate because you have decided not to, but at least make sure that it's available somewhere. Thanks.
Thank you, Amadeo. So on your first question on the fees, and terms and conditions for the trademark clearinghouse, I believe you were asking about the claims process specifically. So the fee information is part of the registry agreement. There is an initial fee, and then there's a transactional fee both during the sunrise and the claims period per registration. But I will follow up to see what if there's more clarity or detail that we can provide around that. And I'm not sure that we understood the second question about the registrars. Could you maybe restate that? Thank you.
Okay. Just for a clarification, in the first part, which is the per transaction fee for claim services, what the contract says, I think, is the maximum it might be, but not the actual one that will be charged, as far as I remember. On the second one is that when you communicate the startup information with the date in which you will start, what has happened now is that we see that the sunrise starts and no registrant is able to apply because there is not single registrar accredited with that TLD, because the error rate, the registrar agreement, is not available. So it's an empty process. And I don't think we want to have all this procedure and all this general information just to have, you know, empty sunrises with no. I repeat, I don't think that what happened in this concrete case is a concrete problem because, as I said, it's longer than minimum. So probably it will be solved by the time that we reach the 30 minimum days. But it might happen in the future that somebody communicates, well, you know, this is my sunrise 30 days, but nobody is able to apply because no registrar is able to send the information because, for instance, the registrar agreement is not available. Okay?
Yeah, I understand. Thank you for the clarification.
Hi, morning. TH from Artemis Internet, applicant for Dot Secure. Yesterday, the GAC asked the NGPC whether, one, the questionnaire that was sent about Category 2 was sent just to those listed in Category 2, or two, whether it was sent to a more broad audience, everyone. The NGPC answered everyone. This morning, if I read Christine's slide correctly, it seems like it was just the group listed on Category 2. Question one, which is it? And two, if there's inconsistency between staff and NGPC, does this indicate that perhaps Category 2 is going to be expanded to encompass everyone? Thank you.
I think perhaps there was a miscommunication yesterday, but the NGPC clearly understands that all of the applicants named who applied for a string named in Category 2 advice were contacted and queried about their plans. So when they replied all applicants, they meant all applicants named for those 186 applicants. So I think that's perhaps the language disconnect we had yesterday. I am not aware of any intention to expand the scope of Category 2 advice, but that would be actually up to the GAC. Thank you.
Good morning. Andrew Merriam, Top Level Design. Thanks, Christine and team. Trang, I believe you said there's 38 community objections that were finished, and I just wanted to clarify because on the ICC website there's only about 12 posted, so I don't know if you can clarify that discrepancy for us.
Nicole, can I ask you to pull up the objections slide, please? That's fine. Two slides up. Two slides up. Right, so there are 36 community objections that have been completed. If they're not all posted on the ICDR website, we'll take a look, but they all should have been, ICC website, my apologies, we'll take a look. Okay. But yes, typically they will post it shortly after the determinations goes out to the parties.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Hi, Yannick Skov from Thompson Trampedach. I have a question for you, Krista. We have a number of clients that have applied for an exception of the code of conduct, and now you have sent the registry agreements for them to sign. But it's really difficult for these brands to sign the registry agreement without the exemption of the code of conduct. When can we expect to get any clarity on this? And is there a process for that?
Sure. Thanks for the question. So code of conduct exemption requests, they can be signed at any time after you've been invited to contracting. So there's two options there. There's multiple parts to your question, so I'm going to kind of take you through the whole thing, if that's okay. So you have somebody interested in requesting an exemption has two options. They can request the exemption any time after they've been invited to contracting. We'll review that and get back to you. You can wait to execute your registry agreement for the decision on the exemption, or you can execute your registry agreement not knowing whether your exemption, you know, would be approved or not. People have different goals and motivations and business models, so either of those options are available. So that's the overall, you know, sort of timing of it. With respect to the code of conduct exemption requests, we do receive those. We review them, and we will get back to you. You will receive explicit an explicit communication from ICANN indicating whether the exemption has been approved or not. And if it is approved, you'll get a piece of paper or a document, if you will, that says that it's approved, so that it's very clear that it's been approved. We did recently did post the process. It's like everything else. The first few take a little bit longer to get through. We are actively working on them with the goal of getting them back to those people as quickly as possible. So I realize you're looking for a very explicit date right now. It's okay. Can't even really talk about specific applications at this point because it wouldn't be appropriate. But we are actively processing them.
Okay. We have many that are eager to sign, but they can't. So
understood.
Thank you.
And we appreciate that. And we're
Hi, it's Jeff Eckhouse here. Quick question on, I guess maybe a clarifying question, on the objection, especially on the community objections, that because of the time frame, I believe we're, you know, since we've paid those large fees, that was sometime in June, and you had said that after the determination, there was an additional process, I think you had said, you know, because some of the determinations have been made, but there's still an additional process. Maybe I misheard, but could you define what you explained that, or I guess what the timing is, because it seems like it's been since June that we've submitted all the information, and it's now almost December that we haven't received some of the determinations, especially for the community objections. So can you explain that, or can you explain what that process is, or maybe I misheard and there is no additional process, that they're still making their determinations?
Thanks, Jeff. So the process that the ICC goes through after the initial review of the objection, the admissibility checks, the administrative checks, they have to find the expert panel, impanel the experts, assign the cases to them. As we understand it, there have been a various set of delays. The experts have been delayed themselves. We've understand there have been a few experts who have recused themselves and different panelists said to be impaneled. So there have been specific delays. There have also been delays because either the objected to applicant or the objector requested a stay or a continuance to the case due to generally being subject to GAC advice or some other reason. But the additional process that I've mentioned a few times now is that the ICC has a review process after the expert panelists make their determination. They submit their documentation to the ICC. They go through a process of reviewing that paperwork and reviewing and finalizing that expert determination. It's part of the standard ICC processing. We've been told that ranges anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks. However, anecdotally, when I was with NGNSO yesterday and in the halls here today, I've been told that some of those are taking significantly longer than 8 weeks. So we will be working with the ICC. We meet with them regularly to understand what those delays are.
Okay. Just the concern I have is that if there is an additional process after the expert determination, that all the parties involved know what that additional process is. Because I don't know if it's defined on their website or if it's clear or what happens. I wouldn't want somebody to have, you know, saying, hey, we're not sure about this decision, go back, and that after the expert makes that determination. So if it could be made clear, that would be great.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks.
Hi, Catherine Ulmer from DotZone. One question for Krista on the registry onboarding. So we have several clients who passed already the first step, what you mentioned, those three steps on the registry onboarding. So you mentioned that the first step was that the eligibility criteria required to obtain delegation token. And I wonder what those eligibility criteria are and how long it takes from step one to step two. Is it just a day or a week or depends? So thanks.
Sure. So the eligibility criteria, we'll actually detail the things that are requested in both parts of step one in the contracting and onboarding session. That being said, eligibility criteria is really two documents that you receive. One is an Excel spreadsheet, and I think you guys have some experience with this already, which is requesting contact information. And the second is a text file or a flat file that has a lot to do with mostly with credentialing, exchanging tokens, passwords, etc. And if you have EPP extensions, providing those as well. And those two are gating factors to your delegation token. The step one can take you a day, or it can take you as long as it takes you. So it's really up to the registry operator how long they can turn that around. But we begin that process with you upon execution of the registry agreement. And I think, Russ, keep me honest here, PDT is about a 6-week process. So if you don't want this to prevent you from proceeding to transition to delegation, you want to get it done within that 6-week period.
Okay, just a quick follow-up. So if we filed all those information with you and we passed PDT, not we, but clients of ours, so how long will it then last before the next step begins, the second step? So PDT has been finalized, the two documents you just mentioned are filed?
Yes, so the second step of onboarding is that, yes. So that is actually mostly a step by our IT department, and that happens upon delegation. So depending on the pipeline, the transition to delegation pipeline, there may be some time in there. Once you become delegated, we get several people inside of ICANN get notified, as you can imagine, and the IT team is one of them, and they begin the actual implementation of that data that's collected to for the passwords and the servers and all that.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Wendy speaking on behalf of the remote participants. I have a few questions from the room. Name collision is a real problem with strings such as games.online in parentheses Cyrillic blocked. When will ICANN publish the mitigation plans?
I'm sorry, Wendy, what was the question? When I can publish what?
The mitigation plans.
Oh, the mitigation plan was already published. The ICANN board, ICANN board new ETLD program committee passed a resolution on 7 October. And on 16 October, ICANN staff published an implementation plan, and we're already acting on it. As I mentioned in my presentation, we already published the all the list of it's a list to be blocked by those TLDs that are found eligible to use this mechanism. So I guess the answer will be we are already ongoing on that.
Thank you. Two more. One, CSC, DBS, not sure what that means. Can you clarify if there's a deadline for CIR, please? Do applicants have to complete the registry agreement within 9 months of the CIR invitation date? And would this mean that we should have the CIR completed within 8 months of the CIR invitation date as a minimum?
At this time, there's no deadline to respond to the CIR because of the supplement.
Thank you. Last question from the remote participant. Let's see. Question to Trang. Do you think that CIR, which started on July 25th with all line of credit questions cleared on November 6th and priority number 69, is still stuck in the contracting system? No RA execution invitation was sent yet. Does it mean priority number is not working anymore?
No, and I can't answer that question specifically in a big forum, so I'll be happy to answer that on a one-on-one basis.
Hi, Urs Erres from InternetX. We're an applicant for several GTLDs, and I have a question concerning the community priority evaluation. You said the timeline would be 2 to 3 months till we know if a community application has passed or not. Is that concluding all community applications or only the ones in process now? And second question, Will applicants who are in contention sets with community applications be informed about when the CPE of these applications are starting? And will they have the chance to interact or to put in additional information concerning these community priority applications?
Thanks for the question. To the first one, the 2 to 3 month timeline is for an individual evaluation. It's not for the whole set.
Okay.
To your second question, can you paraphrase it real quickly again?
Of course. Will you, as a applicant, being in a contention set with a community application, be informed when that starts?
Yeah, so when we send out the invitation, we also send out messages through the customer portal to alert all of the other contention set members that they have been invited. We also update our CPE microsite to publish the election date for that eligible applicant or application.
Perfect, thanks.
Thank you.
Hi, Craig Schwartz with FTLD Registry. Another CPE question for Steve. With the 2 to 3 month time frame that's anticipated, is that when the result will be announced, or is it going to be like the ICC now where they're taking several months after the base panel's done before they make a notification? So is it 2 to 3, or is it 4 to 5, or is it 5 to 6?
Hey, Craig. We're expecting maybe 2 weeks to wrap up and publish the results. Mm-hmm. So it's probably 2 to 3 plus finalization on our side to get everything published and out publicly.
Okay.
Is that it for the questions? Okay. I guess we will, if there are no other questions in the remote participation. Excellent. Thank you all for participating. We have seven other sessions the rest of the week. We'll see you there. Thank you all.